to the Cape Fear Rundown. From WHQR Public Media, I'm your host, Camille Mojica. This week, I bring in Ben to talk to us about a particular budget request from the Wilmington Fire Department, and then Kelly joins us to give us a sneak peek into her upcoming newsroom episode. Stick around. Everyone could use some therapy at least once in their lives. But what about the people that work in extremely stressful and traumatic situations? What comes to mind? Healthcare workers, law enforcement, the military, EMS. But don't forget about the people that go running into fires. That's right, firefighters. The Wilmington Fire Department made a request in their budget for mental health services. Ben joins us now to get into it. Welcome back to the Cape Fear Rundown. I'm here with Ben Shockman. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Cammy.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm also good.
Okay.
I have you here to talk to us about a story that involves the fire department, and it's something you've been covering for a couple weeks now. What is it?
So this is a story about what the Wilmington Fire Department is asking from the city in this year's budget. But it really actually goes back a couple of years. I first kind of heard about this last summer heading into the municipal elections. It was kind of rumbling around. And it was because last year, in the last budget cycle, the Wilmington Fire Department turned in their budget request.
Okay.
And they have all the stuff that they need, right? So you've got to pay employees, and that includes stuff like, you know, regular raises, and then, you know, equipment that we need. We need this many hoses, this many fire axes, you know, stuff. And then there's a section called enhancements. You know, so it's like, hey, if we have additional funding, if we could add anything, here's what we would want to add. And the top request was a contract for mental health services.
Okay.
And they didn't get it. And I heard from a few people in background that they were a little frustrated. This year, they are once again asking for that. It is their top request.
Okay. Is it expensive, first of all?
It is somewhat expensive. It's less expensive this year than last year. Last year, it was over $100,000. This year, it's closer to like $94,000. So it's not free. But it's not like they're asking for multi-million dollars. And they, from what I can tell, they've really done the research on how to make this money go the furthest. It's not, as I initially thought, an in-house employee. This is a contract that would give firefighters access to, you know, a therapist or counselor who's really well-trained and used to dealing with the specific kind of stuff, the trauma and stress that firefighters and other first responders deal with.
So I was just about to ask you, why are they asking for a mental health professional?
Right. And it's a good question because there are some services provided by the city. Those provide some barriers. You know, when you have health insurance, that makes it easier to get mental health services. There's still things like copays, wait times. And you're also seeing, you know, kind of a general therapist or general counselor. And to be frank, some of the stories I have heard about what firefighters have dealt with, the traumatic situations they've been in, are horrifying. I wouldn't feel comfortable talking about them on this podcast because I don't want to inflict that on anyone. I have nightmares having heard about this stuff. But it's bad. And the budget request in very broad strokes kind of alludes to some of this stuff. You know, one example that they give that I can use here because it's in this document is, you know, the number of times that they're forced, that they end up in situations where they're giving, you know, CPR to kids.
Is that because they get there before anyone else?
Right. Yeah. They get there in a fire and a kid is passed out from smoke inhalation or CO2 or whatever. You know, and just like having a child's life in your hands is pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it gets worse from there. And so, you know, while everyone in the city government would definitely, everyone could use some therapy. Everyone benefits from having mental health services now and then. But not to be flip, but like someone in the finance department is not dealing with the trauma and the nightmares, the sleep disruption, the substance abuse, the suicidal ideation, the disruption of, you know, personal relationships that first responders deal with.
Okay, is there any idea, though, why their request did not get approved?
So we asked the city about that, and they didn't get into details, but they basically said, look, we've got to think about the whole city, you know, and rolling out a contract program that's just for the fire department when we might also want to include one for the police department or, you know, something that's a bit more, you know, broad. So they said, look, we put together a working team that includes people from the fire department, people from the police department, people from HR, and they're trying to figure out what's the best way to do this.
Okay.
They also noted that they have this program that's run through the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. It's an initiative that was kicked off in 2019. It's basically like a helpline for first responders that connects them to these kinds of counselors and therapists who know this kind of work, who are used to dealing with first responders. And the fire department's excited about that. This is very new that this is happening, like in the last month or so. And the fire chief, Steve Mason, basically told me, this is exciting. We're hoping that this will help, but we still feel like there's an extra, even additional layer or level of, you know, really customized, tailored is what they call it, tailored mental health support specifically for firefighters and maybe other first responders that they are still going to advocate for. And on background, one of the things I've heard, this is might be the missing piece of the puzzle here, is that firefighters as a culture, I'm speaking very broadly here, but firefighters as a culture are used to putting a tough face on things.
I was going to say, we were talking about this off mic. It's pretty interesting that they are requesting for this, basically admitting, like, our firefighters need this type of service.
Yeah, well, in the Wilmington Fire Department's internal survey, mental health services were identified by employees as one of the top things, if not the top thing they wanted. It's also been cited as one of the top reasons that people resign, retire, or quit early.
You had enough.
I mean, I've heard stories, I haven't been able to confirm them because these are personnel incidents, of people basically, you know, just walking away from like a training day because that just is the day that they break because they're just under so much stress.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a number of studies, one that's cited by the fire department that said the only thing that kills more firefighters than suicide is cancer because of all the carcinogens they're exposed to. But it is a serious issue. The fire department's budget request calls the statistics grim.
Okay.
And so, but in spite of that, in spite of the clear need for this, there are a lot of barriers beyond just the cost. You know, one is there is this kind of, stiff upper lip culture where you just don't talk about mental health. You don't complain. Part of that is the concern that, you know, if, you know, maybe you'll go to a therapist and they'll say, maybe you shouldn't be a firefighter anymore.
Yeah. Maybe you'll say a little too much and then you can't do your job anymore.
Yeah. The analogy I heard was when they started rolling out, more intense annual physicals, there were some firefighters who they weren't concerned about, you know, not being in good enough shape.
Mm-hmm.
They were concerned about, you know, a doctor finding, you know, like a, you know, heart issue, a heart disease or lung issue or like a rotator cuff that's about to go and being told, hey, you can't do this thing that you love anymore.
Because, so if I don't go, I won't know.
Yeah. Because as we've said before in talking about this issue, you know, firefighter compensation varies. You know, Wilmington stacks up well for early recruits, not as well for like mid-level supervisors. But at the end of the day, there's no amount of money you could pay people to run into a burning building unless that's what they wanted to do.
Yes, mission-driven.
Mission-driven. So all of that together, right? So there is a culture of, you know, solidarity and a stiff upper lip and not wanting to talk about mental health issues and just, you know, sucking it up and keeping it together and doing the job. There's a concern that they might not be able to, that someone might tell them, hey, you should slow down or stop doing this job. And they really need to trust this person because there is, you know, a sense in industries like firefighting, like police work, like the military, like nursing, where no one knows what you're going through except other people who do your job.
Yep.
And so if the therapist, you know, is also seeing that day someone who works in a bank and, you know, a lawyer and a journalist and then a firefighter, the firefighter's like, you're not qualified.
Yes.
So all of that together, you know, is sort of the cloud of reasons around why they would want someone or a small group of people that consistency would be a hallmark of this service where, like, you know, it's you're not getting a different therapist every time you're going.
Yeah.
And you're always getting a therapist who knows what it is like to be a firefighter and knows what firefighters are dealing with. And so that's the hope. We're kind of, I guess the vibe is kind of that what the city is doing is a good start.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fire department would like to, you know, they're not going anywhere. So they would like to see this, you know, evolve and maybe get even more tailored for their employees.
So when do we know whether or not this gets approved or denied?
So we are in, you know, we're in mid to late April. Budgets usually get hashed out in May and then approved in June. So in the next 2 months, we'll know whether or not this request gets approved for this year. I will say that if it's not, I don't think the fire department is going to back away from it. I think they will. I think the fire chief and the administration there will always want to do the most they can do for their staff, specifically and especially because, you know, mental health issues is making it difficult for them to recruit and retain people, and it's killing their employees. You know, it's killing firefighters everywhere. So if they're not going to fight for that, I don't know what they would fight for.
Well, Ben, thank you for being on the show with me this week, and I know we'll keep our eyes out on it.
Happy to do it. And yes, we will.
Kelly's upcoming newsroom is full of innovation and interesting takes and info on the affordable housing crisis and what can be done to solve it in our region. She joins us now to explain. Welcome back to the Cape Fear Rundown. I'm here with Kelly Knoyer.
Hello, Camille Mojica. We're going to get this done within 10 minutes because you are on a break between breaks. Of all things considered, that's how much we multitask here.
That is true. Okay, so we are here to talk about your newsroom you have coming up, and we want a little bit of a sneak peek slash summary of what this newsroom is.
Okay, so you know that the main thing that the WHQR staff is kind of obsessed with lately is the endowment. So we wanted to do a panel about the endowment again. This is about how the endowment could solve the affordable housing crisis or work on dealing with economic development in some way that helps people afford to live in this county that we have invested so much of our time and care into. So I brought together a panel of experts to talk about it. I reached out to subject matter experts from across the country. I even called somebody in Wisconsin.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been all over the place trying to cover this one. I don't know that Wisconsin's going to make it into this story because I don't know if that's the solution for us. But we're trying to figure out what the right way of doing this is. And we found some interesting ideas.
What were some of those ideas?
Okay.
Boilerplate.
What if we make ADUs really easy to build? That's accessory dwelling units.
Okay.
That's the exciting one that I heard from an outsider. What if we start making it easy for developers to get financing and in exchange they make a certain number of their units affordable? What if we use endowment money to start doing gap financing for low-income housing tax credit projects, et cetera, et cetera? What if we use it to try and refurbish old houses that are kind of struggling to get taken care of? What if we try and help the heirs property problem by figuring out who owns those derelict houses downtown and telling them, hey, you own this. Would you like to sell it to somebody and then turn it into housing? There's a lot of different ideas, and some of them are pretty exciting.
In order to make it easier for developers to receive funding, is it expensive right now?
So interest rates don't just impact homeowners, they impact everybody in the economy.
Okay.
Like borrowing money is more expensive right now. So previously, that wasn't something that developers were necessarily interested in. But since interest rates have gone up so much, it might be valuable for developers to get some less expensive money. How that would work for private businesses to get it, question mark. I know that for some of the developers I've talked to, being slowed down by another process through the endowment would make things harder because it's less predictability. Mm-hmm. And so the amount of money would have to be higher if it was going to cause delays. So there's a lot of different things to consider with that. And I don't know that that's going, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it's something that's under consideration. And I do think that that is an interesting idea. One of the things we talked about was the equity component of dealing with housing. And there's so much that's been researched about how where you live impacts the opportunities that you have. So if we are interested not just in building a community that is affordable to people, but that helps them thrive, which is definitely part of the mission of the endowment, then we want to make it so that folks are having those opportunities where they live, which means you can't create segregated housing, like class segregated housing.
Okay.
And currently, the way that our financial model works for affordable housing, you get 100% of the entire apartment building, just one kind of person, like one class of people,
yes.
60% of the area median income. You can't make a dime more than that or you don't qualify.
Okay.
So you have to be a certain amount of poor to live here, right? Like that's basically what that means. So the argument that I heard from McKay Siegel, who is the developer on the panel, was we should be making all of these apartments as often as possible mixed and integrated with different types of people so that somebody who's in the penthouse can be spending time with somebody who's not in the penthouse and make 60% of AMI. And that's a way for people to get the opportunities they wouldn't have otherwise. Because everything that we hear about how opportunity works in this country, it's about who you know. Mm-hmm. And if your neighbor is somebody who runs a small business, but you are not from the family that is able to own a small business, maybe now you have an opportunity, a job. Maybe the internship at the law firm is something that's approachable to you. Maybe you live close to somebody who's getting tutoring, and so you can sit in on the tutoring sessions for free so that you both can rise up together. There's so many opportunities that come from these intermixed neighborhoods. It's a well-studied phenomenon. So building that into our model for what housing should be is kind of the idea. And that's not just something that happens in apartment buildings. That was McKay's argument for it, is mm-hmm. the endowment should be trying to put affordable housing in existing projects that are market rate. It can also happen within single-family neighborhoods.
How?
That would be the ADUs.
Oh.
So the accessory dwelling units. The city is putting forward some amendments for accessory dwelling units
okay.
that will make them easier to build. You can make them a little bigger, I think 1,200 square feet, which is bigger than my house. So it would be possible to have an ADU in a neighborhood that's two or three bedrooms, you know, and that would mean that maybe it's a slightly more affordable rental option because mm-hmm. they're pretty inexpensive to build compared to other types of housing that would maybe make it possible for a family to move into a higher end neighborhood that they could never afford otherwise. I'm talking some of these neighborhoods where houses go for $500,000 easy.
Yeah.
They put a little cottage in the backyard because they want to have, you know, the opportunity to move their grandma in later, but she's not at that point yet. They can move a family in there for the next 5 years, rent it pretty inexpensively, make a little bit of rental income to supplement their own needs, and also be making it so that this family has a foothold in a neighborhood they would never have access to otherwise. There are barriers to that, like homeowners associations that have regulations against these types of developments, but it's something that we could really look at regulating and making it easier to do so that you're not just building more housing, not just housing that's affordable, but making it so that housing is in places where opportunities are.
Okay, now I have another follow-up question.
Okay.
What are LIHTC properties, low income? We've talked about AIRS property, we've talked about ADUs. What's LIHTC?
LIHTC stands for Low Income Housing Tax Credit. It's a federal program that allows for-profit developers that specialize in this to build housing that is aimed at people who make a certain amount of the area median income, usually workforce or affordable housing, so 60 or 80% of the area median income. Some of these projects go even lower, like 30% of area median income, but those tend to be really small projects, and it's like a 9% versus a 4%, whatever. Basically, the federal government makes it easy for these developers to do this, and it's a housing tax credit, meaning that whoever's investing in this project mm-hmm. gets to write it off.
Oh.
So the financing is kind of complicated, and I don't think I can adequately explain it here. But the short end of it is specialized developers building affordable housing using a special federal program that involves tax write-offs for other for-profit businesses.
Very cool.
Yeah. An example is Starway or the project that Pastor Rob Campbell is building in Castle Hayne. So those are like the two main ones that we've been discussing since I've gotten to Wilmington a couple of years ago.
Got it. Kelly, thank you for being on the show with me this week and for giving us a sneak peek into your newsroom, which will be coming out when?
Soon. We're still figuring out which day exactly, so... All right, Camille, thank you for having me. Now go back to hosting All Things Considered.
You're listening to All Things Considered.
For WHQR.
Thank you so much for listening to the Cape Fear Rundown. Check out our show notes for relevant links and titles to the music we use this week. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or just general feedback, feel free to get in touch. You can shoot me an email at cmojica, that's M-O-J-I-C-A, at whqr.org, or you can find me on X at Cami Reports. I'd love to hear from you. I'm your host, Camille Mojica, and I'll see you next week.